The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Move over, David Attenborough. We've got a pod of Wales in a very real sense as Football Weekly comes to you today from the Dylan Thomas Centre in Swansea. On the way, another crazy weekend in football. Begovic scoring, Joe Kinnear scouting, Newcastle beating Chelsea, the South Wales Derby. Swansea really lucky to unlose that one. And Arsenal-Liverpool. Gunners go 5 points clear while SAS do an Andy McNabb start. They were in action in the Emirates, but no one saw them. Next up, it's a trip to Dortmund, 6-1 winners at the weekend for Arsenal. We preview that and the other midweek Champions League action. We round up the latest on the continent and Italy, where Barbara Berlusconi's got big plans for Milan. And it's adios Roma's winning run. Like some amplifiers, it doesn't go up to 11. All that plus post tweets and questions from our guests at the Dylan Thomas Centre. Raphael Honigstein was saying this morning, hello Newport.
Stephen Kidd.
Raphael Honigstein's here, James Horncastle too, Barry Glenn Denning. Very, very exciting. We've got a small and select group of friends here who are going to be helping us to look back on this extraordinary weekend in football. An extraordinary weekend that featured so many things across the continent and in the Premier League. As was the big event was Arsenal-Liverpool. Is that where we start, producer Ben? It is. An emphatic display, which you were witness to.
Yeah, it was emphatic. After some shaky first few minutes, I thought Liverpool did their best to ruin the game, as it were, by making it very, very difficult for anyone to string a few passes together. And they succeeded to an extent. And Wenger afterwards rolled out his usual line about the team being nervous. I don't know how many times he's going to say it. And immature, etc. But that's his... He loves to talk about these things. Anyway... In the end, they looked very comfortable simply because they made the Liverpool midfield look very, very old and sluggish. And Gerrard looked his age, I thought, and was a very, very sad sort of piggy in the middle between Ozil and Cazorla most of the time. So, yeah, in the end, a great result, fantastic performance, and just the kind of result that sets them up nicely for what will be a very difficult week.
Mm. How about that Ramsey goal?
Yeah, I think one of the big things about Arsenal this season is the variety of quality goals they're scoring. I think that speaks of the standard of play they're showing. Cazorla, I thought, was excellent. I think, to some extent, he's been overshadowed since Mesut Ozil has been signed. It's mainly been about his show, but I thought he was perhaps, with Thomas Rosicki, Arsenal's top performer, on Saturday. I think they exposed a lot of Liverpool's frailties. I think, yeah, their strong point is this Suarez and Sturridge strike partnership. It can actually be a weakness, really, because there's little behind them, really. I think they contributed something like 82% of their goals. I think they need to be contributing goals from other areas, creating things from other areas, which is what Arsenal have been doing so well.
Mm, very interesting. I admired Alan Shearer's refusal to predict whether Arsenal could win the title until they've beaten all the other teams. but Barry, can we now consider them contenders?
Well, yeah, I don't think a single pundit on either match of the day was prepared to put their neck on the block and say that Arsenal will win the title. I said with no little confidence on Thursday that there was absolutely no way Liverpool wouldn't score in that game, which shows how much I know. And the defending was... why can't they win it? Yeah, they're 5 points clear and playing really, really well. My only concern would be the sort of lack of strength and depth. But if they can get certain players back fit again, then yeah, why not?
Well, they've coped pretty well with the injuries so far. I mean, you've had Flamini go out, who supposedly was irreplaceable.
Walcott
out, Podolski,
etc., etc. And of course, Old Trafford next weekend, which will be a huge game. Before that, Rafa, they're going to be away at Borussia Dortmund.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the Flamini might be missed there a lot more than he was on Saturday, because the kind of problems that Suarez and Sturridge caused were very almost isolated. They came up against the defenders, but there was no one really behind them or on the flanks before Coutinho's introduction to really trouble and stretch the Arsenal defence. And that's when the likes of Flamini or Flamini himself was so powerful, because he provided a shield that hasn't been there. And I can tell you that Mertesacker couldn't have been more effusive. He said, well, Ozil is great, but Flamini makes all the difference for us, because we now have finally somebody who actually knows how to play as a defensive midfielder. And I think Arteta might struggle. I think Dortmund will really give him a hard time, and I think they're huge favourites to win this game on Wednesday.
Borussia would be happy with a draw in this game?
In the context of the group, a draw would probably be enough for them, but they are not a team built for playing for a draw, neither are Arsenal, for different reasons. But if it is a draw, I think Dortmund have a lot more reason to be happy with that. Arsenal under real pressure after losing this game at the Emirates, because it looks as if this group will come down to sort of a mini league where the results against Marseille will be discarded. So I think it's a fascinating game, and I still think Dortmund will have too much for Arsenal.
Right, heavy metal Dortmund. And they were impressive at the weekend, no?
Speed metal, yeah. They were really quite brilliant.
Right.
Stuttgart were particularly naive at times, the way they defended. They insisted on playing this really high line, even when they were 5-1 down. Arsenal will play slightly differently and will make it more tougher for them. But Dortmund were incredible. Lewandowski scoring a hat-trick. Looks in awesome form right now.
Mm. Sorry, this Tiki has a question. I meant to check this and I forgot, so someone might know either up here or in the audience. Why wasn't Arteta suspended for the Liverpool game after being sent off?
Had he served it in the League Cup? When was he sent off? The previous weekend?
He was sent off against Crystal Palace, which I
presume... All right, and then they had a League Cup game, so that would have... If it was a one-game suspension, the League Cup would have...
Okay. Yeah.
I'm
not buying that.
Okay. It's a conspiracy.
Have they appealed it maybe or something?
Are you about to declare that Arsenal win void?
Yes. Yes. Well, I just think it's really unlikely that nobody except me noticed that he should have been suspended. So I'm presuming there's some clerical or admin thing.
Right. Or the fact that he served it in the League Cup. Okay.
But isn't it a 3-match ban for a straight red?
Did he get a straight red?
Only for violent behaviour.
Only for violent behaviour. Thanks, Frank. Right, anyway, okay, so quick prediction? Arsenal?
No.
No? Barry?
I go for a draw.
Yeah, okay. All right, then.
Just be different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they'd be happy with that, you know. I know it wouldn't sort things out, but I think they'd probably be happy to go
Arsenal?
To Borussia Dortmund. Yeah.
And they've still got to go to Naples, though.
Yeah, but...
I think it's the tricky thing. I think they've played it worse than that. They've got to go to Dortmund, and they've still got to go to Napoli, which I think will be... unforgiving test.
Right.
And we have to assume Napoli will beat Marseille at home.
Right.
So
wait.
Which would put them top of the group if it was a draw.
Mm. It is an assumption. Napoli, of course, after their best start ever under Rafa Benitez, even better than the days of Maradona. So, yeah. Mm. Right. Now, meantime, the weekend brought smart faces on Tyneside, first of all, for that terrific Joe Kinnear story, and secondly, for the unexpected victory over Chelsea. How good is Loic Remy, and how come nobody else picked him up?
Because Joe Kinnear was so ruthlessly efficient in his recruitment that he got him in first.
Right.
He was ahead of the curve.
Yeah, he may get him in again.
But they've kind of already signed him as well, haven't they? Because you know, that deal was pretty much done in the spring until Harry popped up and brought him to QPR instead. So.
All right. Well, it was a fantastic performance from Newcastle. Some people are asking, where was this... In the Sunderland game, though, people who are not happy, people who insist on seeing the dark cloud amid the silver lining.
Yeah, I think Newcastle at the moment are probably happier to play against a side that will be seen as favourites, who maybe underestimate them a little bit. I think they went into the Sunderland derby as huge favourites because of the relative league positions, and then when they had the ball, they really didn't know what to do with it. And it does remain a problem. They are very inconsistent. You don't feel that for all the individual talent, they're ever really achieving real progress in the side. And I think Pardew is a very average manager with a very average team. And you see some wins and some losses, and you see some draws, and they'll end up in mid-table.
All right.
Just I think they were quite fortunate as well, because Terry hit the bar, had a header cleared off the line as well. And you know, Newcastle broke the deadlock with what was a goal, really. That was all about Kabay's, the shape of that ball from Kabay, because I think they couldn't defend that. No one could defend that. Mm. And yeah, they.
But that wasn't fortunate. That was a supreme bit of skill, no?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But I mean, it's, I think getting that, breaking the deadlock in that way sort of settled Newcastle, because I thought for a time, as ever really, they're kind of nervy, quite brittle. I think on paper, when everyone's fit and healthy, they've got a very good starting 11. It's just they can never really keep anyone healthy, and they can never kind of develop that cohesiveness that they perhaps once had a couple of seasons ago.
Mm. All right.
It's interesting how Mourinho really laid into his team afterwards. You don't really see that very often from him, and I think in his first reign at Chelsea it hardly ever happened. And you know, 10 games into the season he's already playing this card about there's not enough commitment, effort. He was having a real go, and it's an interesting move, I think. Maybe he felt that the team would already be in a much sort of more stable situations where these kind of lackluster performances wouldn't be happening.
Mm. Do you think they look complacent on the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. I think that they have a system set up where they rely on the back six, the four defenders and Lampard and Ramirez to supply the ball forward, and then something happens. They're effectively like two teams at times, and when these guys in the front for whatever reason are not in the mood, then very little happens. And this was one of those games. They don't have this kind of machine-like way of overpowering oppositions the way the old Chelsea used to play.
All right. Now, they've got Schalke midweek. Schalke won at the weekend.
They did. They won 2-0 at Hertha, which is a very big result. Unexpected, almost. And, they're coming here. But they're coming to Stamford Bridge. I have to say, I don't have great hopes for Schalke. They are very, very poor. And especially after this sort of performance from Chelsea, you'd expect them to have a strong reaction. But maybe they can somehow sneak a draw. I don't really see it, though.
All right. Well, Arsenal then on 25 points, significantly clear of Chelsea, Liverpool and Spurs, who are all on 20 points. And Manchester United, Man City, we'll come on to them in a second. But what about Spurs, Barry? Did you catch their game?
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
Right. Once again, the home fans not giving Spurs the support they needed, really, to perform at Goodison Park.
I mean, Spurs are very choosy, not scoring many goals, and it was an awful game. There's really not a great deal to say about it.
Right.
I'm puzzled by the continual insistence of ABB on picking Roberto Soldado.
Right.
I think Soldado gets a lot of unfair stick because he is a guy who just does only one thing. He only scores. He never is involved. He's never involved for Valencia. You'd never see him.
But he doesn't score.
Well, he scores when he gets an opportunity. But you have to just give him the ball at some stage. He just doesn't get the ball at all. I think he's the perfect player for a team like Spurs. It's just that the guys behind him just don't do anything at the moment.
Need more Eriksen, is that right?
They need more Lamella. They need Lamella to learn English.
They just—I don't know—they're not—they're not playing as a team
at
all.
And yet, they've got their best start ever in the Premier League.
Defensively, they look very good, which is a start, and gets you quite high up the table if you keep, quite a few clean sheets. But yeah, they were disappointing.
Mm.
Lloris?
Well, I was just going to say, we knew Lukaku was strong, but it turns out he can have a head-on collision with Lloris and still walk away. play on that.
It wasn't his head.
No laughing matter, this, because people are now making... Because at the time, I must admit, I'm a little bit superficial at this. I thought, well, he's been knocked out, he wants to go back on. But people...
Run it off.
Yeah. People quite rightly making the comparison with the Petr Cech Hunt incident.
They're not making the comparison. That's what gets me.
You think that they're not?
No, because it's all about Lloris and should he have get up, or the AVB, did he make a mistake overruling the medical advice? But no one's making the point that it's actually a really bad effort from, or at least reckless, shall we say, from Lukaku. No one's talking about that. In that respect, there is no parallel with Hunt, with Hunt did, because everybody. I think it was very reckless, because as a striker, you are in control of your limbs most of the time, and he was, and he could easily have hurdled him or jumped out of the way or at least made some effort to get out of the way. We didn't. He just carried on and knocked him in the head, and I think could have had very bad consequences. Our instinct is always to protect forwards and say, oh, they have a right to go at it, and you know, he's only trying to play the ball, but he wasn't. The ball was already safely in Lloris's hands, and I think it was really quite a nasty thing to do, and no one's talking about it.
All right, I'm not sure about that. I'd like to see that again. Baron?
I'm not convinced either that Lukaku did anything wrong.
Well, he did. He knocked him out with his knee.
But it was Lloris who struck his knee with his head.
Yeah, but that's what a keeper does. As a forward, you have to be... Sorry.
Well,
no tapping on the desk.
Rafa, your hand's always getting you in trouble in broadcast situations.
The reason why you don't see that very often is because strikers know what's happening when the keeper is going for the ball, and they make an effort to protect their fellow player by pulling out, and he didn't. And neither did Hunt. And this is the sort of thing that only happens in the Premier League, because you get people like James who say, well, he didn't do anything wrong. But he did.
Hmm. All right, that's interesting.
I would hold Andre Villas-Boas more culpable and his medical staff for letting him continue to play. I thought if a player has been knocked out and is quite clearly dazed and groggy, then you've a duty of care to get him off the field. Because if he got another bang in the head... or indeed just keeled over a few minutes later, then, you know, is that Lukaku's fault? Is it the doctor's fault? Is it the ref's fault? And, you know, it's not like they didn't have another very good goalkeeper on the bench who was ready to come on and replace it.
Friedel looked very amused on the sideline, I must say.
I've said before in horse racing, if a jockey gets a concussion, he's obliged to stand down for 2 weeks minimum and then has to pass it. A medical to be allowed back on a horse. And I think it should be the same in football and in rugby, and there doesn't seem to be a set rule, and it's quite dangerous because someone's going to get killed at some point.
It's actually the second week in a row that it's happened for Spurs, because Andros Townsend was also knocked out when he went over the advertising hoardings.
But I don't understand, you're saying it's quite dangerous and somebody get killed, and you don't understand why the problem is with Lukaku.
Well, controversy. There you go. We've got plenty out of that Spurs game at Everton. Good point, though, at the end of the day, going to Goodison Park. And that's it for part one. Coming up, the South Wales derby and so much more after this. And the South Wales derby. Now, we were talking about whether this was going to be as intense, you know, because there were a lot of non-local... You know, it's a local game for local people, and a lot of these chaps are from
nothing
elsewhere.
For us here.
quite possibly. It didn't look as intense as I thought it was going to be, Barry.
I suppose it's one of those games that after the big media build-up, it failed to live up to expectation. It wasn't a particularly fascinating game of football. I'm sure it was for the fans of both teams involved, but it was pretty poor. And... Swansea failed to turn up on the day. I think they were a bit like Newcastle against Sunderland the previous week, just didn't seem to be as interested in winning it as Cardiff were.
Angel Ranjel, am I pronouncing that correctly? Yeah, they're getting nods. Angel Ranjel made as many saves as Michael Vorm and Hugo Lloris on Sunday. That's interesting. Other news from that game. Well, Gary Medel, that he was actually named after Gary Lineker.
Yeah, apparently.
Which Gary
so.
Lineker, James Horncroft?
Which Gary? One.
Okay, only one. But he had a terrific performance.
Yeah, I thought once they could get him on the ball, he began to run the show a little bit for Cardiff. I thought Cardiff were very good at kind of making Swansea do what they didn't want to do and play the way they didn't want to play. What
do you mean by that?
Well, just stopping them from playing, essentially. But I have with my concern with Laudrup sometimes. I think he's a kind of philosophy guy. Do you know what I mean? I think he has an idea of how Swansea want to play, and he just lays that there. Whereas I think I think Malky is much more of a kind of tactical kind of, he will try and take things away from teams, whereas with Swansea it's just, let's play the way we want to play, and if we can't do that, then what can we do?
Is Swansea not heavy metal enough for you?
I don't know. I don't know how are they kind of
power ballady.
Oh, I think that's harsh. But I think they were disrupted very effectively by Cardiff. I mean, Cardiff couldn't match them in an open, free-flowing game of football. They
Why
knew
try
that.
And play them?
And they managed through very clever positioning and through some very executed tackling, well-executed tackling, and just being all round very aggressive, but perfectly within the laws of the game to unsettle them. And I'm not sure that the derby effect had really any bearing on what happened on the pitch. I think it was just like one of those games where Swansea just can't get going, and they haven't got this plan B to fall back on. They either can play football or they can't, and they weren't allowed to.
Mm.
I'd be curious to know, a lot of the games over the weekend were kind of ruined as spectacles because of the weather. I was down here late last night. I got in and went to explore some places of local cultural interest, such as Nando's, Murphy's, and the walkabout. But it was hammering down with rain, really windy, really unpleasant. I'm just wondering, was there sort of an aspect that the weather affected the game at all?
I'm not sure, Barry. Mm-hmm. Rhetorically, you're wondering. Eh?
Yeah.
Well, it's a fair point you make.
I am aware the game wasn't here, by the way. Yeah. That it was in Cardiff.
Right. Who's going to finish higher, do you think, this season? Cardiff or Swansea?
I think...
What Barry's thinking, James?
Cardiff
or Swansea?
Are you asking me now what Barry's thinking?
No, I'm not asking
Well, I just think that Swansea's European adventures may... They don't have a very big squad, and they're sort of suffering in a regard that Liverpool have in recent seasons. Just their European adventures sort of causes them to take their eye off the ball at home a bit, maybe, and just they don't have the squad to be able to fight on two fronts.
Well, it's the glamour of a trip to Cuban Krasnodar this week, this Thursday. And while Cardiff will face another bout, possibly with Vincent Tan, Monkey Mackay quite keen to highlight the performances of both Medel and also, of course, the goalscorer Kulka, both of whom his arrival at Cardiff he credited very much to his former assistant Ian Moody.
Yeah.
And it does look, although they've come up with this win, that things can't go on this way, which is possibly why you're hearing so many people linking Mackay to the job at Norwich.
Yeah, I mean, you're wondering if it gets to the point where he almost needs to engineer an escape from the situation. He very pointedly, I think, praised or dedicated the win to the supporters, the players, and the staff, leaving out the people above.
Mm.
So it doesn't look like a very healthy relationship. The test, of course, doesn't really come now when their results are good. It's as soon as they'll pick up a couple of defeats, which they will do because their squad isn't that good, then the owner starts interfering and then they'll probably come to a crunch. That's why if you look at the two teams vis-a-vis, they're in a fairly similar position. But I think as a club, Swansea are a million miles ahead the way they're set up and probably will end up in a better place as a consequence.
Right. Harry Morris here with us asking, has any club in memory sold their soul / identity as visibly as Cardiff in the pursuit of footballing achievements? Barry? I guess MK Dons would be a shout.
MK Dons, yeah.
But they didn't sell anything.
Leeds lived the dream.
But they,
for a very short period.
Does that count? I mean, they didn't change their kit. They didn't...
Well, they did many years ago.
Did they?
Well,
to White.
Yeah, to White.
To White, okay. All right. Why are you in... Okay. Drafty? Anyone in Germany who's...
No, but...
Had a boob job for...
Which, what?
Well, they kind of, they've kind of gone for the kind of plastic makeover thing. You know, it's a bit like Jordan. They've got a tan in and it doesn't look real anymore.
It's the other round. It's the plastic clubs trying to look real.
Ah.
That's the big game in Germany. But I don't know. I think it's... I mean, the club... The thing is, the club wasn't asked before you know, whether they would be happy to make these changes. They were bored. Unfortunately, this is the way things often work. And then these changes were made, and I think there's a limit to what you can do. It'd be interesting to see once some of these owners have ideas about the new club names coming in, whether that will then cross the line. Because I think the attitude is here is, you know, you're used to having owners and you're used to being pushed around. You're almost used or conditioned to having bad owners over the last 150 years in all clubs. That someone being particularly a bad owner isn't enough to get a popular revolt going.
And even if it was, what can people do? Because the way that it's set up, they're sold by the previous owners, and there's no real voice for the fans anyway in what decisions
are
made.
Well, if you really get to the point where you just do not go to games anymore at all,
or don't buy any marketing. Would Swansea be one of the few examples in the top flight or the top divisions of a club where there is actually active fan participation in the direction they take?
Oh, through the fan ownership. I mean, it's the only club in the Premier League, as far as I'm aware, with significant fan investment and fan ownership. Look, Germany's a different model. I think it'd be unfair to say that everyone has to follow the German model because things have developed differently over the last 150 years. But it's the sort of thing that shows you, I think, sometimes it's a shame that a club is not owned or controlled by the people who matter, but some guy who just comes in and he might be gone again in a couple of years when he loses interest.
Fans seem to have this sense of entitlement. They're happy to take an owner's money, but then when he starts instigating other changes, they get up in arms about it. If Newcastle fans want Mike Ashley to leave or Cardiff City fans want Tan to leave, stop going to games. The only thing they're interested in is making money. So if the money is not coming in, they will leave.
But it won't hurt them, will it? Matchday revenue, something like that? I mean, that's become less and less of a kind of issue for them, you know, with TV deals and that sort of thing. It's hard to know where you can really, really hurt the owners in that respect.
And fans did say then, oh, but we've already paid for our season tickets and, you know, so why should we? But you have to be prepared to make a sacrifice or else just put up with these changes that you don't like.
Well, it's a bit of a bleak scenario, isn't it, really? Here's Claire saying, why are you in Swansea, not Cardiff? Will you come to Cardiff next time? Claire, well, because there's a literary festival in that. Can we here at the Dylan Thomas Centre?
I genuinely have no idea where I'm in Swansea. I just was told to turn up, but here I am.
Right. Well,
I'm happy to be here.
You'll be aware that there was the sold-out Doctor Who event here last Saturday, and there's a very, I think, popular burlesque event coming up in the same series.
Yeah,
we're nestling between the two.
I'm not performing. I don't know why you're pointing at me.
You're not, but who is?
Scarlett Bush.
Scarlett Bush is performing here at the Dylan Thomas Centre. So, yeah, there you go. Something to look forward to. Super. Right. Anyway, well, I mentioned Norwich and the problems that Chris Hughton's having there, and the manager's called Hughton, but there's not much to be laughing about there. At Norwich, 7-0. And they didn't look in any way bothered about it, did they?
I think
the heads went down even before they got on the field.
The line to take from that, I guess, would be, you know, Joe Hart gets dropped, gets benched. Ruddy is, you know, you could perhaps push to replace him as a candidate for the upcoming England friendlies against Chile and Germany. Horror show, really. I mean,
him particularly, or just everybody? For
Norwich? Well, no. I think, come on. I mean, he didn't get much protection. I think Norwich were cowed very easily by City and fell deeper and deeper and deeper. But you know, we've seen goalkeepers come under similar sieges, like Fraser Forster, for example, against Barcelona. And you know, Ruddy kind of missed his cue, I guess.
Right, but Man City 7 goals, thrilling stuff, Barry.
Good.
All right, then. Is it 8 goals in 5 matches now for Aguero? Is that right? I thought I heard someone say that. I'm just running it past you. He's scoring loads of goals, though, so
sounds plausible.
Yeah. Does it tell us anything we didn't know about City? They can be very good at home.
No, it doesn't tell us anything new about City. I think the interesting thing with City is, are they actually changing the game, or is it still a game that's very much dependent on one of the big guys having a great day, and if they're not, then team on the whole look a little bit, I don't know, shifty. I think Pellegrini is getting the hang of it. I think you sense that he's beginning to get his message across, that the players beginning to understand what he wants, and it's a very different kind of setup that they had under Mancini. And of course, they've had this problem in the defensive department. But I still think they are the favourites to win the title,
really?
despite their bad start. Yeah, for me.
Really? How many points are they back exactly? Anybody? Gentlemen, they're saying six. 6 points back. So, I suppose that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible. What about then, amid suggestions that Chris Hughton's not going to make it to the West Ham game next weekend, apparently the situation is about to precipitate there in Norfolk. Meanwhile, Man United, all sorts of drama for them, not least the fact that should David Moyes get the bullet, it looks like Sven Göran Eriksson could be waiting in the wings. How exciting is this?
Oh, that's, yeah, unless he's... Oh, actually, no. I can't say what I was about to say.
Say what you were about to say, James.
No, just cut it out afterwards.
It was something about Ulrika Johnson.
Yeah?
And unpacking her on his flat... Yeah, no.
No, go on. It'll be, a lot more exciting than what?
Well,
although Ulrika Johnson was suggesting that things with Sven aren't exciting.
No, exactly. It'd be more exciting to unpack some Billy flat-pack furniture.
Right. Has Sven's got a book out, I'm guessing, yeah?
He has.
Because there's all this stuff's been coming out about...
He's always got something
out.
And in the book, there's all sorts of revelations about his amorous activities and also the fact that he signed a pre-contract to take over from Sir Alex Ferguson.
Who knew? Yeah. Well, I think that was quite common knowledge, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Everybody knew except me. Just me, then.
People in football knew.
All right.
I'd just like to add that I don't think I've ever built anything from IKEA without ending up panting, sweating, feeling quite satisfied with myself.
Yeah. And it always took way longer than anybody else involved thought it was going to. So
possibly because I kept putting things in the wrong place.
Yeah, they ended up the wrong way round. Yeah. I don't think we want to take that any further, really. So, but anyway, Man United, David Moyes, terrific stuff from him. They beat Fulham. Cries of Yol out at Craven Cottage. Javier Hernandez retweeting a Sky Sports story suggesting he could leave Man United. That was a really interesting thing for him to do. Did he genuinely do that? It seemed to come from his Twitter account. Did you see that?
News to me.
There was a Sky Sports story, yeah. And he retweeted it. Basically, there was a Sky Sports slug saying Javier Hernandez could leave Man United. He retweeted that. So I don't know what that means. Mind you, I retweeted about 18 articles from The Guardian without realising on Saturday. So, you know, these things happen.
So I think, I think it's not a secret that he's a little bit unhappy
about
being frozen out. And so is Shinji Kagawa, apparently. He's told Pals, in newspaper talk, that he might want to go somewhere else in January.
All right.
But I don't think he will.
You don't?
No.
Okay. Now, Man United have Real Sociedad coming up midweek, who beat Osasuna 5-0 at the weekend, but they've lost all their Champions League games so far. So there you go. Yeah. That's probably enough of a part two, eh? We'll be moving on to part three. There's still some more Premier League to go. Hull Sunderland.
Ooh.
The extraordinary events at the Britannia Stadium with Asmir Begovic and that. And our big Euro Champions League wrap and post. And some more questions from the Dylan Tolliver Centre. All of that after this lovely little bit of music. Foot Weekly pressing ahead here. Other news. Hull, Sunderland. Sunderland coming back down to earth with a bit of a bump there. And several fairly hairy tackles.
Yeah, Lee Cattermole got sent off, which is not a huge surprise because he's always good for, you know, one red card.
Andrew Desainez, though.
Yeah, I mean, Gus Poyet seemed to think Cattermole's was harsh, and there's a suggestion he's going to appeal it. I thought it was a straight red. Cattermole clearly thought it was a straight red because he didn't even wait for the ref to take the card out of his pocket before walking off. And both nasty tackles. Interestingly, both nasty tackles on former Sunderland players. Myler, Desainez on Myler, and Cattermole on El Mohammadi. So Sunderland actually did very well with nine men. Didn't concede a goal, and with their one shot on target, could conceivably have equalised, but Steve Harper saved well. So.
I didn't really appreciate Poirier's sarcasm after the El Mohammadi challenge. He said the way he reacted, it was like he'd broken his leg. Well, it was like, well, you wouldn't be that surprised considering the nature of the challenge, yeah. Would you? It was pretty awful.
I think he was also suggesting that Cattermole's reputation goes before him, but I think it should. Mm. If you have a reputation that
seven red cards, is it?
That, I think that was his seventh. Mm. And he's got away with a lot as well. You know, he could be well into double figures by now. But I think if you have a reputation for tackling like that, then it should be taken into account.
But well done to Hull anyway. Terrific stuff, Steve Bruce. Brilliant. I'm moving on to Stoke Southampton.
Wonder goal.
Asmir Begovic is Stoke City's joint top scorer in the Premier League. Asmir Begovic, one goal in last four games. Lionel Messi, no goals in last four games.
Yep.
It's been found out.
Yep. And anything else you want to add about that game? It's very windy at the Britannia.
It is. I thought it was very telling that Asmir, who really is a lovely guy, felt almost ashamed for what he'd done and apologised to Boric afterwards. Instead of celebrating, because that's the guy he is.
Very lovely bloke. West Brom, Crystal Palace, terrific goal from Berahino in particular. All loved that one, did we? Do you know he scored 10 so far this season for club and country?
Still earns 850 quid a week.
It's remarkable, isn't it? Remarkable for a footballer.
Yeah.
And manager latest, Palace manager latest. Any news?
There's a suggestion Tony Pulis is no longer interested. Mm. And they still haven't appointed a manager.
Oh.
Beyond that, I haven't
too. Well, it's more or less as we said last week that they seem to be kind of looking to make it through to the
championship.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And the other game, of course, is West Ham against Villa.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah. There you go. Interesting stat that West Ham this season, 10 games, they have made 29 shots on target. So that's 2.9. shots on target per game.
Well, that's what happens when you don't play with any strikers.
Not necessarily.
That 50 million they spent on Andy Carroll looks better all the time, doesn't it?
Certainly does. All right, now, posts this week. Friggity saying, I never got the dislike for Platini that was surfacing in our last pod, the football jefe, and a 40-team World Cup continues, Trigger. Why is that bothering people? Well, I think the Platini thing is, first of all, he's very complicit in this whole World Cup to Qatar business, which is a fairly major black mark in most people's minds against him. And the 40-team World Cup, well, when you look at how much more competitive the Euros tend to be than the World Cup.
Used to be, right,
before the next one. Yeah.
Well, if there's a 40-team World Cup, that means there'd be 50-odd extra games in the group stages. I think the World Cup's already too long. You will be in a position where groups will be the last round of matches. One team will have already finished their games, so teams can conspire against them who are playing at the same time. There's so many flaws to it. And he just comes out with stuff without thinking it through, I think. And
isn't the charge that he does think it through and it's about getting more votes for taking over from Blatter?
Is quite clearly a political thing. I think I mentioned on Thursday, Friggity obviously didn't read the article in question, but Jonathan Wilson went, you know, sort of point by point, why this is a terrible idea, a 40-team World Cup.
Van der Vaart next comparing him to Mayor Tommy Carchetti as a good man who's basically just taken off course by the politics within which he operates. I don't know how you feel about that. No. Okay, good. Right. Other Champions League action that we should mention that's coming up in the next few days. Ajax taking on Celtic. What are the odds on Celtic? Repeating their success at Celtic Park, do you think, against Ajax? James.
I mean, they're going to have to play Milan at Parkhead as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which, you know, considering the state that they're in, which we'll probably get to, you'd probably fancy them to get something out of that.
Trying to steer this onto Milan, aren't you? This.
I am, yeah.
All right, we'll talk about Milan then, James. You have it your way. They're taking on Barcelona midweek after another disaster. They lost 2-0 at home to Fiorentina. They're off to their worst start. Well, even before this game, it was their worst start since 80-81 when they went down. No, sorry, 81-82 when they went down.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of talk afterwards that Allegri was going to get the boot before the Barcelona game. Then Barbara Berlusconi, the former president's rather buxom daughter, then weighed in, and there were suggestions that she was looking to get a complete clear out of all the club directors. Gazetta this morning talking about barbaric invasions. But it looks like Allegri's going to hang on for a day or two more.
I didn't realise when you said James wants to talk about Milan that you're talking in the first
which
person.
James. There you go. What do you
7-2, by the way, the odds against Celtic.
7-2?
Yeah.
Thanks, Barry.
Cheers. Should have gone to Barry.
Yeah. So, there you go, yeah. What's the story with Allegri, then?
I took the words out of my mouth. I think the expectation is that he will have the next two games against Barcelona, which is a game he specialises in, some would say, at home. He's been hammered whenever they played the Camp Nou. Remember, they lost their 4-0 last year. But yeah, I think in an ideal world, they'd like him to last until the end of the season. But, I mean, in terms of the problems that Milan have, he is the least, I think. Because the job he did last year in getting them to third place and into the Champions League, considering they lost Ibrahimovic, considering they lost Thiago Silva, was probably more impressive than the job he did when they won the Scudetto a couple of years ago. And, this is a club which no longer wants to spend the kind of money that it did in the last quarter of a century, the last 26 years. Doesn't have the resources to compete in the way that
they do.
They
do still spend money, they just spend it very, very badly.
Well, you could say that, but I mean, this is... Galliani, for example, has come under some criticism. Yeah, as you said, Barbara Berlusconi perhaps wants his power base to shrink within the club. But has he done bad business recently? I mean, he got Ibrahimovic, who Inter sold for $64 million for $24 million a year later, which was paid in two instalments alone. Got Balotelli, who many people would say would be worth more than the $20 million that they paid for him in January. Picked up players like Montolivo for free. Okay, I mean, there is a lot of kind of garbage there in terms of, you know, just...
But who have they... Okay, tell me this then. So all the players they've lost at the back, from Nesta to going back to the good old days of Maldini to Sossi Baresi, etc. And you've had a succession of players leaving. I mentioned Nesta, Thiago Silva more recently. Who have they brought in that hasn't been about the big flashy names up front?
I think... Mexes, obviously. Thinking that the centre-back partnership could recover from Nesta and Thiago Silva with Philippe Mexes and Christian Zapata was very optimistic, I think, to say the least. But, I mean...
But isn't this this whole theory, the conspiracy theory, very unlike Italy to have one, but that Allegri is the useful idiot in this whole thing that needs to be protected because the fans then have somebody they can blame instead of pointing
But
the fans
are not blaming him.
They've figured it out what the real problem is.
Yeah, I think that they're blaming Galliani now. And it's interesting with Barbara saying, I've gone to Daddy to get Galliani out.
No, but
she denied his comments, But I think the fact that they've come out, I don't think they came out.
It's problematic because Berlusconi's other daughter, Marina, who basically runs the holding company, Fininvest, is the one who's saying, I don't want you spending money on Milan anymore. So, I mean, you've got these two pulling factors. Barbara wants them to perhaps do something different, which would require spending. And then you have the other sister, Marina, who's saying, no. So it's women in Berlusconi's life, as always, causing him all these problems.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Right, anyway, so they're going to be off in Barcelona, and that could be an absolute car crash of a game.
Yeah. I mean, Messi's not scoring. He's finished as a player. So that might be quite good for them.
All right. Juventus are going to be at home to Real Madrid, and they absolutely have to win. They could get a draw.
To keep things alive. I think Juventus have improved a lot since the Bernabeu game a fortnight ago. Well, I thought they were probably the better team, played the better football. Even when they were down to 10 men, they still had an opportunity to bring it back to 2-2. They've won every game they've played in since then. They've kept clean sheets in every game since then, which has been an issue for Juventus because the defence that has been so tight for the last 2 years hasn't been, and it now seems to be getting back to its best.
Right, no Chiellini this time, because of course he was sent off, Barry, in the last Champions League game, so...
It doesn't matter, because...
It's the League Cup.
No, because this game is being played on November the 5th, and Juventus always beat Real Madrid when they play them on November the 5th. But you knew that, as I'm sure did sexy pirate James Horncastle.
Yeah.
Because it would be really embarrassing for you if I had a nugget of Italian football trivia that you didn't know.
No, but I'm delighted for you.
2008 and 1986,
November.
Really? Yeah,
and how about that? Real Madrid coming into this from the very disappointed. I mean, they got a victory against Rayo Vallecano in one of the Madrid derbies, but they were, was it, they were 3-0 up and they brought it back to 3-2 and almost equalised.
I think Rayo hit the woodwork twice, had a penalty appeal rejected.
Marca yesterday saying, if it was up to me, I'd tell Ancelotti to pack his bags and go. Incredible.
Who said that?
One of the columnists in Marca.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah, but is that that Ronquero fellow?
No, he's in Ash.
Oh, okay.
Which he talks out of. Yeah. And we can't leave Italy without discussing Roma. Yep. Sad day for Romanisti at the Stadio Olimpico. Sad day for the Giallorossi there up in Turin. Well, it's sad in some ways. I'll start again. With Roma,
enough of the Serie A already.
No, this is important. Only one team, Raphael Honigstein, only one team coming into this weekend in the major leagues still had won every single game. It was Roma, but it's ended. Against Torino. You saw the game. What do you think?
It's a brilliant game. Fantastic. Yeah. I love Serie A.
There you go. But even though that incredible winning streak is over, they're still top, James.
And they're still unbeaten.
They're still unbeaten.
They drew, so it's not the end of the world.
Right.
They've doubled the number of goals they've let in.
That is also true, Barry. More top facts from Serie A's Barry Glendinning. How about Javier Zanetti, Barry?
Yeah, what about him?
Well, he's back. Do you remember, Javier Zanetti?
No, I know who he is.
Yeah. Well, then he was 39 and he did his Achilles tendon and everyone said, that's it. We all had all sorts of eulogies.
It's
a bit like
back?
When you say goodbye to somebody and then you find that you're walking alongside them down 3 minutes of corridor or whatever. We'll have that going out of here. But everyone kind of gave him his send-offs and he turned up on the bench again 6 months afterwards.
Yeah, a record recovery, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost up there with when Badger recovered from his knee ligament injury ahead of the World Cup.
He did Buddhist positive thinking back then. I don't know if Zanetti is a Buddhist positive thinker. I'm guessing not.
No, he's a Catholic. He's a very strong Catholic. Yeah.
Right, okay, good.
So he probably prayed to the relevant saint.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the Italian clubs do have remarkable medical facilities, so.
Yeah. Anyway, Bundesliga. Anything you want to add about the Bundesliga, Rafa, since you're here?
Quick on Bayern, equaled Hamburg's 36 unbeaten games in a season record from the early 80s. But no one's happy because they played very poorly against Hoffenheim. And Pep afterwards saying, I need to change my ideas. And the interesting thing with Pep is he always doubts his own ideas constantly. So he changes all the time, even during games. And there's beginning to come a point where people are wondering, is it perhaps a bit too much change? Should he not just settle and let the team get on with it the way that the team can, because individually they're, very, very good, instead of changing it constantly during the 90 minutes? So we'll see. I mean, Victoria Pilsen is not going to be the biggest test, but then they've got the Dortmund game coming up in 10 days' time at Dortmund, and that's going to be a fascinating game.
Boy, that'll be some match. Well, we appear to come to the end of today's Football Weekly, very alive in Swansea. Special edition. Many thanks for everybody joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday with a proper roundup of the Champions League action, so do tune in then. For now, though, from all of us here, it's Yakida.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.